A dozen years ago, when Indiana passed its first school voucher law, the stated goal was to give some kids a chance to leave underperforming public schools and try their fortune at presumably superior private schools, schools that would have been out of reach but for state assistance. Now, initially, the General Assembly determined that as many as 7,500 vouchers would be divvied up among students who, A, qualified for the federal free and reduced price lunch program, and B, had tried public school for at least two consecutive semesters. Over time, lawmakers eliminated the numerical cap and loosened the eligibility criteria. Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and on this week's show, we'll look at the push for universal vouchers. That is a program in which the state would help pay for virtually any student to attend virtually any private school. Indiana lawmakers, from the State House to your house. A universal voucher proposal being considered by the Indiana General Assembly this session would likely double the amount that Hoosier taxpayers spend on vouchers to an estimated $1.1 billion over the coming biennium. Now, backers say it's a wise, even necessary investment in our children and in the state's future. Opponents, on the other hand, say it would signal the end of public education as we know it. Joining me to debate the issue are Republican Representative Robert Boehning of Indianapolis, longtime chair of the House Education Committee, and the architect of Indiana's school choice program, Democratic Senator Shelley Yoder of Bloomington, the chamber's assistant minority leader and a member of the Senate Committee on Education and Career Development, Betsy Wiley, president and CEO of the Institute for Quality Education, an Indianapolis-based nonprofit advocating expanded school choice, and Chris Lagone, executive director of the Indiana Small and Rural Schools Association, a Kokomo-based organization that represents more than 100 school districts across the state. Thank you all for being here. Before we look ahead, let's look back. I love history. 2011, this was your baby back then when this relatively humble proposal was put forth, a capped at 7,500 vouchers. There were all types of limitations. Did you envision that we would be having this kind of discussion 11 years later or 12 years later?
Actually, I thought it might have been sooner. Clearly, in my career, it has been, even going back to 1994, we had started trying to advocate for more school choice. I actually ran on that platform as well when I ran. So I was thrilled when everything kind of came together. We worked with Governor Daniels. We came into majority. It's been an incremental process, and it continues to be incremental. But I think as you see the success of the program, there's been reasons for us to increase.
So if we had gotten in the time machine and went back to 2011 and we were sitting here talking about it, and I said, look forward a decade plus from now, this is what you would have envisioned. You saw it as the incrementalism was a necessity, a political necessity?
Clearly. I mean, even going back to your comments about 7,500, we capped it at 7,500 the first year, just to kind of get it started, knowing that it was not going to likely hit the cap, but that cap was removed eventually right after.
Doubled, I think, the first year and then came off the third year.
Yes, so it was just kind of incremental. And if you've looked over the history of school choice in Indiana, it has been incremental growth throughout the period of time, from 11 all the way to today.
Right, certainly every biennium, if not every session. Senator Shelley Yoder, you were not in the General Assembly at that point, but you were a student of politics. You were in local government, I believe, about that time in Monroe County. So you've watched this issue. It's not something that's unfamiliar to you. What's your take on this? Some would say rapid, meteoric. Some would say too slow growth in the school choice movement in this state.
I would say that in 2011, the proposal was based on student need to give families, students more choice. Where we are in 2023, looking at the biennial budget, that choice will no longer remain with students or with parents. That choice will solely remain in private schools. Private schools, we are pretty much funding private schools to be able to have the choice on which students they want to choose. Because with the new proposed budget, a family of need has to qualify, and that qualification is earning for a family of four $222,000. That pretty much is 95% of all Hoosier families. And so if you think that's going to be a choice for students and for families, It is not. It is going to be the choice for private schools to be able to better select how a student looks, how they perform athletically, academically. The choice will remain with charter, private schools, and not with the students or the families.
And where we're getting these numbers, just for those who haven't followed it as closely, right now it's 300% of the federal poverty limit. It would, under the proposal, go to 400% for the family of four. So there's a lot to digest in what you said. I want to get some reactions, but let's go to Betsy Wiley as well. You were working for Mitch Daniels, the governor who signed the bill that we were just talking about in 2011. And the governor at the signing ceremony said, you know, social justice has come to Indiana. Now, shortly thereafter, he said, you know, this is not going to be some huge phenomenon. This is going to be fairly limited. We're not going to see this, you know, upend, I'm now paraphrasing, upend Indiana's educational system. He thought it would be a fairly modest experiment. How did we, was he wrong? And if so, how did he get it so wrong?
I don't think he was wrong.
He was just lying to us.
No, and I think it has been fairly modest, right? So we have about 4% of our students that are on the voucher program today, right? 53,000 kids out of 1.1 million. So it's a choice for some families, and it's working for some families, and it's providing a good education for those kids and those families. Is it the panacea? Did we see 90% of, you know, Indiana students leave their public school and go to a private school utilizing a voucher? No. Will we, if the legislation that passes? No, we won't. Will we see incremental growth as we've seen over the last decade with the program? Absolutely.
Let me get your take then. I'm guessing this will be like a ping pong. I mean, give us your take on where we've come over the past 12 years.
Indiana Small and Rural Schools is against the expansion of the vouchers, mainly because as we've seen it over time, starting in 2011, even in the 13 budget, our schools and our students were receiving up to 10% less in funding than they were in 2009. That was a SEEP study that was done on the 17 biennium. So our agenda was kind of formed as schools saw the expansion of vouchers. The General Assembly wasn't able to keep up with the per student funding based on inflation and cost of living, and their per student funding over time decreased when compared to where we were in 2009. So we don't have a problem with parent choice. Many of our members benefit from the choices Indiana has provided, but we really want to see a budget that's rising all boats with the tide. And right now, the budget as it's constructed, as Betsy said, is focused on 4%, but they get 30% of the new money in the budget.
And we've all, I think, used the term voucher, and that's certainly the shorthand that we use. Does it matter to you and your organization that now this has sort of become something maybe a little different? It's a scholarship, choice scholarship program, and the notion it would be based on the expansion of education savings accounts, is that semantics? Does it matter what it's called or how it's framed?
Yeah, I think we're concerned about the education savings accounts because also as fiscal conservatives, we know that in order to properly monitor the program, we've had to expand the role of the treasurer's office and things for the educational savings accounts on the special ed. It's limited to special ed in current legislation, and that requires a lot of oversight. So, you know, going back to your analogy of what did we see 2011, a fiscal conservative in 2011 saw that we would have a $1 billion program that also expanded the size of state government in order to monitor it. I think they would also question if it still was a fiscally conservative plan.
Is it? Two questions. Is it fiscally conservative? And then two, I want you to respond, if you would, to Senator Yoder, this notion that this isn't about parent choice, but somehow has become essentially school choice.
You know, it's interesting that Senator Yoder would say that. Yesterday we had a hearing on some additional resources for charters. And it was amazing to me to see the parents that came in, the students came in, who talked about the value of having school choice, whether it's charters, a traditional public, there's more choice from traditional public to traditional public than any other choice, or vouchers. The reality is parents are choosing, and parents are making that decision. And Chris was in the hearing yesterday. There was a lot of powerful testimonies on what that difference has made. So I do believe it is making a difference. I would also suggest that, you know, if you look at the way the vouchers are, it's actually choice scholarship. It's always been choice scholarship from the very beginning. It was choice vouchers is a, what we call it in the short term. The reality is only 90% of the state general fund dollars follow that student. So we actually leave money in still in the state coffers. So when a student moves from a traditional public school to a choice scholarship school, the state's actually saving money, and which is more money that we can make available to traditional public schools. So I would suggest to Representative or Senator Yoder's comments in regards to schools choosing, remember a majority of the, which is one of the opponents' arguments to get it, but majority of our choice schools are faith-based schools, and their very mission is to serve those underserved. They are not out there saying, I'll take you because you're, you know, this, or I'm not going to take you because of that. They are actually serving a preponderance of kids of need and kids in poverty.
Well, the law or the proposal says specifically they can't discriminate by what? Race, gender, the basics.
Yes, exactly.
But, and I know nobody as a practical matter is going to say, oh, you have, you know, learning disabilities we don't want, so you're going to drag down our scores. But the concern, of course, is that it's simply a matter of saying we don't have that specialization of that program, so you're effectively closing the door on a student. Is that?
And I would also suggest that if the state wants to take that step and make those funds available to non-public schools, that they will open their door to everyone. It's really not been an issue of the fact that they're not willing to serve them. It's the fact that they don't get the dollars that follow those kids, which would make it available for them to be able to serve them more.
I saw you leaning forward. What? Why doesn't that make sense in your mind?
I want to go back to semantics are important. And when we say this is a choice program, of course parents and students are going to think, I have choices. But what we are seeing is they don't. And the numbers simply do not match that claim that faith-based schools are prioritizing need. Because at the end of the day, us moving to a universal voucher choice program, it will be choices that will be placed in private schools to make those decisions. They can make the choice on which students whose parents are earning $222,000 a year, so that's going to blow open the amount of students who qualify for those vouchers, making it much more competitive and much more difficult for families and for students to have that choice of where they're going to go. And I am so glad that we are talking about the 90% of Hoosier families, students, who choose to go to traditional public schools. Our funding, our new funding, should mirror that. We should have 90% of new funding following the 90% of children who are choosing to attend public schools. But that is simply not the case.
Which, in fairness, though, you can't grow a program without putting additional money in it. So, it's going to be above what the rest of it. I mean, it's just not fiscally possible. I would really, though, strongly suggest that if you look at the, right now we're 300% of free and reduced lunch, so it's $145,000. You're not having a huge impact moving it up. Majority of Hoosiers do not earn $145,000. The biggest component of this bill.
I think it
bill,
might be $154,000, but let's not quibble
The numbers, yeah. It's changed over because of inflation. I think when it was originally moved, it was $144,000. The reality is the bigger expense, according to LSA, is the pathways that are being removed. You say we're universal. I would say universal is no cap. I mean, to say that nobody...
There is no numerical cap on the number of scholarships or vouchers.
But there is an income cap. And if I'm talking universal, I'm thinking, let's take the cap off, and then any student is eligible. Any student's eligible to walk into a traditional public school today. We don't say, I'm sorry, but you make too much money. You're going to have to pay something.
Respectfully, we are pretty much blowing the lid off of need. If 95% of Hoosier families qualify under the expanded private voucher program where a family of four can earn $222,000 a year in order to qualify, that's pretty much opening it up to everyone.
Well, and the Legislative Services Agency, if I'm not mistaken, in its projections or in its fiscal note, talk about the fact that going forward, the estimate is that 90% of the students who would be recipients of these scholarships would have gone to private school anyway. So have we moved aside from the notion that we're giving choice? You know, it used to be you have to go a year, full year someplace before you could make the switch. You know, now that would be off the table. But what about this notion that if LSA is right and 90% would have gone to private school anyway, how are we saving the state money, as Representative Boehning says? Aren't we just throwing money into a different pot of?
So I would disagree, and I would say look at some of the facts, right? The current users of the program, according to DOE and their choice report, right, are 80% of them the family makes under $100,000, right? So it's heavily minority used, it's heavily low income used. So that would be my first point, is who actually utilizes the program today. To your point, if you make it universal or close to universal, I think all those people are taxpayers, right? And so to Representative Boehning's point, and again, according to the DOE, if every kid that is using a voucher today went to public school, it would have cost the state $65 million more last year to send them to their public schools.
But that's assuming the private schools didn't exist in that scenario.
Yeah, all those kids, right? But all 43,000 didn't go, and they went to their public school, would have cost $65,000 more. We don't have any problem with a $220,000 a student from a $220,000 home or $1 million home or $20,000 home going to public school and paying whatever amount of money, $6,800, $7,200 per kid. But when they choose a different educational model and get, on average, a $4,500 voucher or $5,000 voucher, that becomes a problem. And I don't understand that.
I think the problem is right now with the budget as it's formulated is we have a 6% inflation rate. In the second year of the budget, we're only looking at a 0.7% or something like that growth for public school students. If the inflation is still the way it is, it's going to put a lot of pressure on communities to make up for the funding gap, and that pressure will become in the form of referendums. So local taxpayers will be asked to make up the difference if we don't do something to equalize out the budget. And that's putting pressure on local taxpayers to pick up the cost not covered by the state in order to increase it from 300% to 400%.
And again, I've seen the numbers, and I think they actually came out from your caucus, Senator, that if you look at, you know, yes, 4% theoretically in the first year, 1% and change, but since there's a complexity factor in terms of the distribution.
And textbooks are included in there. You're going to have to peel
that
off the top.
I think I saw 3/4 of school districts would actually see, with inflation, a net loss in funding.
A net loss. Inflation at over 6%, and 2/3 of our traditional public schools will get less than 5% the first year and even less than that the second year. But I just want to respond. The numbers simply don't add up. What you were claiming about private school being a choice for low-income students, I think if we're going to talk about need-based funding for students getting the best education that they can, then that definition should be the same. But give me a moment to just explain how, in the three different buckets, traditional public schools, we're going to define a family of need. A family of four making $36,000 is or less, then that student is identified as a student in need. $36,000 for a family of four. Let's talk about pre-K, My Way, which we know that investment, our return on investment, is so good and important for Indiana. But even in pre-K, that family of in need would be identified as making $77,000 or less. For vouchers, for private school funding, we've defined that a family in need, a family of four, is making $222,000. So this just
I guess to the notion, though, is it about need or is it something more now? I guess the suggestion is this is about giving people choice.
I was just commenting on your comment that this is giving access to low-income families to be able to go to a private school. And I would argue this is universal vouchers will remove that opportunity because it gives all the power still is there, for a private school to decide, because more families, pretty much all families, will be able to compete for those slots in private schools, and the families in need will have to compete just alongside every other family in Indiana.
You know, if this is in fact incremental, it has been certainly to this point, and I think you both have indicated that's, you see more, What is nirvana for you? Define it. I mean, when you're done, maybe this is like the interstate system, you know, it's never done. It's always going to be construction project here or there. But Betsy, what does it look like when you're satisfied? When you say, well, I can disband this operation. We don't have to give out, our PAC doesn't have to give out money anymore.
Sure. So for me, nirvana would look like every option is available to every family in the state of Indiana. Universal choice for everybody. Public to public transfer, charters.
You would just say, here's the dollar.
Vouchers.
Here's a wad of cash. We're putting it in the kid's backpack, figuratively.
Yes.
And so
for me, the way you would measure it is, and people kind of do this study, but asking parents, if there were no barriers, where would you send your kid? What kind of learning environment would you like your kid in? And then where do they go? And when those match, that's nirvana, right? When every family is able to get their child in the educational environment that they think best works for them, whatever that is, for us, that's when we would say mission accomplished.
Chris, is that nirvana or hell on earth for you?
If we had the fiscal means to make sure to...
So philosophically, you're okay with that. For you, it's about just the dollars and cents here.
In 2008, the Indiana General Assembly made a deal with the taxpayers. They lowered the property taxes by taking that away from public schools, and they said they would take on the funding of common schools. That definition has been broadened, but if we want to make sure that the fiscal needs, the financial needs to offer the education is present all across the state of Indiana. The pressure of expanding vouchers has limited our ability to fund all schools. And so if there was money was no object and it had no fiscal limits, sure. But $500 million is a big number.
Just to be clear, so money, if that's off the table, are you concerned at all about the notion of accountability or transparency?
Sure.
Are those secondary concerns? Are those?
Our legislative agenda is that all schools accepting public dollars should be held the same accountability and the same fiscal oversight.
School board meetings,
yes,
public commentary,
that's
et cetera,
right.
Et cetera.
That would be nirvana, is the same accountability and transparency across the board for all schools. So parents and students really do, if we're talking about choices, do know what they're getting. But I want to go back
to
nirvana.
Maybe the terms public and private and parochial are passe. Maybe it's just more brand X, Y, Z.
Well, I would just say nirvana would be halting this voucher expansion, because that is not providing choice for students and families. It's just funding private schools, but not providing more choice. So halting the voucher expansion. And the other piece of this, nirvana, would be letting new funding follow where 90% of Hoosier children and families are deciding to send their kids.
But that's where they're going now. Who's to say that percentage won't go up if it's made more attractive?
How much more can you go up? It's 95% now. And as we've heard from the guests,
you could go up. What's the chance that you'd like it if it went up to 100%?
That would be an additional 5% of families.
Nirvana is that all Hoosier kids are flourishing. The parents have an opportunity to send their child to the school that best meets their needs, that they will have the opportunity to have an education and be successful in life. We know that a majority of parents today are choosing a traditional public school. I think that's always going to be the case in general. But I also believe that we ought to be, an advocate of universal ESAs, education scholarship accounts, where I hand you a debit card where you can go pick. And I think as you look at as education and things going to, as our technology is going to advance, there's going to be things I may decide that I want my son or daughter or grandchild to take a course in X from one entity that may be the best at providing math. I may want to go somewhere else. I think.
But it could also be buying a laptop, right? Or going to therapy.
Well,
going to soccer camp if you think you're an aspiring soccer star.
Well, we can obviously limit that under ESAs today. You can't go to soccer.
Limiting it, though, is sort of defeating the notion.
I mean, you can make sure that it's structured so that they're using it for educational purposes. So, yes. But I do believe, I think the reality is what I'm advocating for is student success. And clearly today, with 38% of our kids passing both sections of iLearn, we are not where we need to be.
What is the equilibrium? Where do you think it gets? You said a moment ago you sort of suggested 100% private would be a disappointment, but what's your projection of where there's equilibrium, where everybody is, where everybody wants to be?
I think for choice to really work and is to have everyone has an equal opportunity at having an opportunity to go to the school that best meets their needs.
But if we
and
are
not,
talking...
not putting caps in place mm-hmm. or not saying, well, you have to do this, you have to do that. I mean, I think all those restrictions put impediments to providing choice and opportunity.
You're going to hate me. Our but viewers and listeners are going to hate me. That's the school bell ringing.
I want to say that in February of this year, the Center for Education Policy did an incredible study, nonpartisan, just looking at those academic successes. Our voucher program is not providing
that. That'll be our sequel for this discussion.
those successes for students, that is truly.
I told you it was going to go fast, folks. Again, thank you. Again, my guests have been Republican Representative Robert Boehning of Indianapolis, Democratic Senator Shelley Yoder of Bloomington, Betsy Wiley, President and CEO of the Institute for Quality Education, and Chris Lagone, Executive Director of the Indiana Small and Rural Schools Association. And time now for our weekly conversation with commentator Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of Indiana Legislative Insight and its sister newsletter, Indiana Education Insight, both part of Hannah News Service. Ed, where does this go from here?
Well, obviously to the Senate. You know, after it goes through the House, it's going to go back to the Senate. But the big thing is the budget. And there's going to be an ability for either side to find an excuse to either fund more or fund less. But the Senate, particularly the Senate Republicans, are very skeptical about expanding the voucher charter money. And if we see that the fiscal crisis that we're in, the banking issues, the international global issues are going to potentially point us toward a recession, then you may see some senators saying, well, yes, you know, I kind of agree with the concept, but I really think we need to cut back, and all this money that's going to charter vouchers from the House, I think, is the place that we can kind of ratchet things back a little bit. And that just gives them an excuse to do things.
And if we did pull back that political cover and expose their true sentiments, would we see some people are concerned about finances and others simply saying, this is a philosophical issue. We got to have transparency. We got to have accountability. We can't just throw money at something and then wave goodbye to it.
Absolutely. It gives cover for the people that have a philosophical problem with it because of either where the money is going just in general or because they don't think that there's sufficient transparency, sufficient accountability, and they may want to see some guardrails built in. But at the same time, the Senator Ryan Mishler, who's chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee, has kind of a tradition of saying to one side, okay, if I give you everything that you want, is it okay if I give the other side what they're asking for? And so there's a precedent for, you know, more money going to the charter and vouchers here. But again, I think the fiscal forecast is going to be the catalyst for this and is going to be the excuse for being able to give the anti-voucher, anti-charter forces in the Senate the ability to say, let's cut back.
And now the stakes are high. We will stipulate that. Both sides have done polls. They're, you know, trying to buttonhole lawmakers,
TV
encouraging people. Exactly. Does any of that matter, or really, to your point, does this just come down to the revenue update and anything else before that is just sort of possible?
Both sides are dug in, I think, and we're just looking for excuses.
Very good. Ed, as always, appreciate your insight.
Thank you, John.
Indiana has a surplus of money, but some warn of an impending downturn in the economy. Lawmakers will have to weigh it all when they come up with a budget. What's it mean for you on the next Indiana Lawmakers? Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis, and on behalf of commentator Ed Feigenbaum, WFYI Public Media, and Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, I thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit WFYI.org for more State House news. Until next week, take care.